It's very exciting to be here. And of course, in this late hour of the day, I would like to keep things simple. And as you will see, I think it's pretty straightforward how you can treat iron deficiency. This is a status report. Let me just emphasize this. Things are in flow. And as the year progresses, hopefully with a climax at the AHA, we shall be able to basically give you a more complete picture. Now, what I will discuss are the treatment options for anemia and heart failure in general, and then specifically how we are proposing to do this with intravenous iron, and lastly, give you an idea of the status of the ongoing phase 3 studies in this context. How can we treat anemia and heart failure? Now, of course, this talk easily could have given by Carl Svedberg, focusing on the erythropoietin, dapibrutin alpha, which is, in terms of research over the last, I would say, 5 to 8 years, the mainstay of this area. But going back even further, you could theoretically argue, at least in very severe cases of anemia, that blood transfusion could be considered. Now, from a very practical standpoint, you probably will not consider it if the hemoglobin is above 9.5 grams per deciliter, and in many places, I would say, even you wouldn't consider it above 9.0. It's simply too much risk, and there's a shortage, of course, also of material. Now, what else can you do? Don Silverberg basically taught us, he's a nephrologist from Israel, quite a lot in two JACC papers done in 2000 and 2001. And we need to remember his study, many quoted as an erythropoietin study. We need to remember he actually gave a cocktail trying to treat anemia by combining erythropoietin with intravenous iron, actually iron sucrose, as we will discuss later here, and he gave also vitamin B12 and folate. He published twice on this, never double-blinded the research, only in the second study had a control group, had very encouraging and positive results. Donna Mancini performed a study single-blindedly analyzing erythropoietin in combination with vitamins in patients with heart failure, also positive results. Now then you have the RedHF big trial going on testing dapibrutin alpha in heart failure patients. But of course this is built on 3 phase 2 studies that were done with a similar scheme but over a shorter period of time and with exercise capacity and quality of life endpoints. Basically, this is a strategy of giving an anemic patient erythropoietic agent. Iron is permitted, but the general strategy is to give the EPO alone, and I understand that less than 10 or 20% of cases actually do receive some form of oral iron, but it is allowed in these studies. And what I will focus in my talk on is that you can actually give iron in a very effective form by giving it IV, and there I will show you results of 3 studies that have been performed in the past 3 years, and they are of different quality and different design, but in any case, they have resulted in 2 phase 3 studies ongoing. Now, this is an interesting story. We actually, 2 of the 3 studies were done by research fellows of Philip and mine, and the first one to report was not necessarily the first one to start, but his design was so simple that he was definitely the fastest easily, and that was Aidan Bolger, and he did this in London. He just recruited 16 patients, 12 of them men, and exposed them to intravenous iron, and just showed that this can be done if you simply recruit anemic patients with a hemoglobin of less or equal 12, and use a very simplified and crude, and many would say too broad, inclusion criterion of a ferritin of less than 400, and basically just requested that these patients also have normal status for vitamin B12 and folate. And what he achieved is he increased the hemoglobin from 11.2 to 12.6 and the ferritin from 87 to 217 by giving, on average, 1,000 milligram of IV iron, iron sucrose, in 5 to 17 days. This is much more aggressive than we are doing now in our studies, but it just shows you what this is possible. Iron sucrose is not iron dextran. So whatever you know about anaphylactic reactions and intravenous iron, more or less forget about that. This is different compounds, and the new compounds that we are using is even slightly more modified to this end. These are much safer compounds, and you shouldn't worry about this. You can give them in 200 milligram doses. It's a short-term infusion. In most cases, you would do this over 15 minutes. But hematologists tell us that they are doing this also in a push, like one and a half, maximum 2 minutes, and still don't see problems with this. What any case, he did short-term infusions over 5 to 17 days, gave them about 1,000 milligram and saw these changes. And not only did he see changes in laboratory characteristics, so it's not only a cosmetic change, but he also saw that the change in hemoglobin he achieved in these patients related to the change of quality of life, Minnesota Living with Heart Failure score, and the change in the six-minute walking distance achieved by these patients, and both these changes were significant within these 16 patients, but of course you need to be aware this was an open study. The second study was done in Argentina. Now, this is a very interesting study. It went over a period of 6 months, and patients received, this was a controlled study, but not double-blind, patients received either intravenous iron, a similar correction scheme as described before, but over a longer period of time, or they received nothing. And basically, these patients, if you then analyze them, they had some degree of renal dysfunction, these 40 patients with heart failure, lowish ejection fraction, hemoglobin less than 12.5 for men and less than 11.5 for women. So they had, if you like, an anemia diagnosis as well. And they had to have a more severe form of iron deficiency with a ferritin of less than 100 or alternatively a transferrin saturation of less than 20%. This slide is in detail also in your materials. Now, the patients received, again, 200 milligram-wise the intravenous iron, weekly for 5 weeks, and then monthly. And basically what they showed is, like in the other studies, that they corrected the iron deficiency, and what they achieved is they achieved a significant difference in NT-BNP over the time of this study. So it further increased in the patients who did not receive the treatment, as you can see here on the top right-hand side, and the NT-BNP value slightly even went down in the patients receiving the treatment. So there's an indication that maybe the cardiac status from a biochemical standpoint improved, and also ejection fraction went in the right direction. They also made a statement that hospitalizations occurred in the patients who received control, but the patients receiving intravenous iron did not experience any hospitalization. Of course, you have to take this with at least 2 grains of salt, considering the size of the study. Now, let me reemphasize. We have two types of iron deficiency in our patients. One is absolute iron deficiency. There is an absolute depletion of iron stores, and you may be able to diagnose this with a ferritin of less than 100. But you also have functional iron deficiency, and what we want to treat in our patients with heart failure is absolute and functional iron deficiency. To try to do this, you have to consider then also a broader population than just the anemic patients. The idea was not primarily in this third proof of concept study, not primarily to treat anemia, but to see whether this concept can be extended to patients with slightly higher than anemic hemoglobin values, actually up to 14.5 in this study, and whether in those patients with iron deficiency you might also have a benefit. Now, this being a small study, we still try to do this in a stratified and randomized way. So we had an anemic cohort, a non-anemic cohort. The cutoff was 12.5 for hemoglobin. And in those two sub-cohorts, we randomized 2-to-1 to intravenous iron and control group. Now, this was a study where the patient knew what was going on, but the observer doing the important investigations like a treadmill exercise test did not know what was going on. So this was observer blinded. Now, here you can see the principal scheme, a correction phase in the beginning, again, with weekly 200 milligram treatments for the first 4 weeks, and then a maintenance phase. Patients were treated up to week 16 and then assessed for the endpoints of this study. Here are the patients. Altogether, 11 controls and 24 patients receiving the IV iron treatment. You can see that the majority, like in most of these studies, were male. The mean age was 63 years, And these patients, most had an ischemic etiology, and these patients were all in New York Heart Class 2 and 3. And you can see that they were on standard medication for heart failure patients. One-third of them had diabetes. If you want to look at the biochemical characteristics at baseline, these patients had a mean ferritin of around about 75. At baseline, transferrin saturation 20% at baseline. The mean hemoglobin at baseline was 12.4. So it was right in the middle of where you can decide anemia or not anemia. Half of the patients were anemic. Half of the patients were not anemic by classical definitions. And if you take the peak VO2 as an indicator, the mean peak VO2 of the whole study population was 14.0. So this was a group of patients by every classical standard way of assessing, you would say had moderate heart failure overall. Now, the patients received the treatment, and it's important to know that the treatment in general works. It does change the ferritin. Of course, it does change the transferrin saturation. So you successfully treat the iron deficiency. But here's the first surprise to many, and it is important for the whole analysis. We did not significantly change the hemoglobin values in the patients receiving IV iron on average. So the change in hemoglobin was similar in those who are control patients and those who are IV iron patients. So these are results of pure treatment of iron deficiency. Here are the main results of the study. Looking at total peak VO2, not body weight adjusted, the overall p-value was 0.08. It was significant when body weight adjusted, and as you can see here, the difference is quite substantial, and if you take peak VO2 per kilogram and have an increase of 2.2 on average in the group of patients receiving treatment compared to the control subjects, you would consider this from an exercise physiology standpoint a robust result. Exercise time, again, a p-value of 0.08 for the whole cohort, and 60 seconds improvement in treadmill exercise time with a modified Bruce protocol in this study. Now, I've emphasized the point that the patients did not have a significant hemoglobin change in the control group and neither in the treatment group, but we treated the iron deficiency. It's important to say that particularly in the patients who were anemic, that the changes in transferrin saturation significantly related to the changes in peak VO2 in these patients. This was not significant for changes in hemoglobin. Now, this points us to the direction that indeed it may be possible to have twofold types of benefits by giving intravenous iron in these patients. On the one hand, of course, you may in very anemic patients improve hemoglobin values and then have a positive effect on oxygen delivery. But if you are iron deficient, as Professor Ponikoski pointed out clearly to you, that the oxidative phosphorylation, that mitochondria might not work as well, and therefore you have also a problem of oxygen utilization. So overall, peak VO2 or exercise capacity depends on both these factors. Now, the overall concept was to stratify the patients into anemic and non-anemic patients, and we also wanted to look into symptom development. Now, it's interesting to note that New York Heart Class, here are the results for the overall group, highly significantly beneficial. There was, to some degree, from a purely mathematical point of view, a better effect in anemic patients than in non-anemic patients, but if you take the global view, you have to say that the results were similar in patients with anemia and without anemia. Now, this being a single-blind treatment where the patient knew, again, you have to take this with some grain of salt because the patient was aware of treatment assignment. Interestingly, we could corroborate these results by good results with regards to patient global assessment, where the patient reports how he feels compared to baseline and tries to validate this in a questionnaire result. And there was a significant improvement with this score overall in the patients receiving the intravenous iron, a moderate impairment in patients not receiving it. For fatigue scores and for Minnesota Living with Heart Failure overall scores, there was an improvement, significant on the one hand, and a strong trend on the other hand, for the patients receiving intravenous iron. Of course, again, we have to emphasize safety issues. In Dr. Tobley's study, he reported no safety problems. Dr. Bolger, in his 16-patient open-label treatment, reported no safety problems. Here's what we experienced. And it's important that you note that, of course, in the control group, we have less patients than intravenous iron group. 7 versus 10 patients, so in a proportional sense, more in the control group experienced more than one or at least one adverse event. Serious adverse events, 1 and 3 respectively, non-serious adverse events, 6 and 7, and we had one death in the treatment group. Now, another safety aspect may be, what about oxidative stress? It's often discussed. Well, we had one way of assessing this. It's difficult to really have biochemical markers of oxidative stress, but one is suggested, it's malone dialdehyde, and malone dialdehyde did not significantly change in neither of the treatment groups, so overall, we can't really say that there is any problem. In terms of inflammation, p-value is 0.24, but you can see here there was an increase in high-sensitivity CRP values in the control group and no change in the treatment group. And similarly, there was a slight increase, p-value of 0.23, in the control group with creatinine values and no change in the treatment group. So all these results published last year by Obi Okonkwo, our research fellow who did this for his PhD in JAK, led to the development of the FAIR-HF trial. In that trial, we are now trying to emulate everything we have done before, the 200 milligram dosaging, the treatment scheme, by using a new version of intravenous iron that you might in the future give even quicker, or possibly, and that is one reason why this is developed, give it in higher doses even. So theoretically, this can be given up to 1,000 milligram per short doses. So you might basically, in the future, if this all holds true, consider maybe having the patient not coming weekly in the beginning and then monthly, but maybe move them to a 3-monthly development. But we are quite a way away from this kind of scenario. First, we need to prove it works. And to do this, we have designed this 2-to-1 randomized study, FAIR-HF, and we have finished recruitment as of the end of last year for this trial. We are now just in the follow-up period. We hope to finish this by summer and then report later this year, as I said. 306 patients are in the treatment group, 153 are in the placebo group, and it's important to emphasize this is a double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized controlled trial taking place internationally. The primary endpoints, there's two of them, New York Heart Class in patient global assessment, subjective opinion of the patient, how he or she performed since the beginning of the study. And basically, you can see in this international study, the chair is Philippa Wilson, who's chairing also this evening, and I have the pleasure with Piotr to be co-chair. But then also, for instance, being in Switzerland, Tom Lüscher is involved, and of course, Helmut Drexler, for instance, is also involved in the steering committee of this study. What we do there is we including now patients with hemoglobin of 9.5 to 13.5, and the patients had to have an ejection fraction of less or equal 40% if they are in class 2, or less or equal 45% if they are in class 3. Patients basically were treated with intravenous iron, and if you're interested, but again, I think this slide is also in your package, there are some stopping rules and restart rules. Of course, you want to stop the treatment if the ferritin shoots too high, and then you have to wait until it gets low again. But otherwise, this treatment, of course, is observed by a DSMB, and hopefully, so far, there is no problem. So let me conclude at this stage. I think intravenous iron is a new treatment option for patients with iron deficiency and heart failure. So far, we have 3 small studies. They act as the phase 2 and proof of concept. The results overall are encouraging, and in my opinion, FAIR-HF shows that iron replacement brings benefit to the patients. At least it's suggested it so strongly that we could, together with the sponsor, design 2 studies, and they are ongoing, and we hope to report soon on them. Thank you very much.